Game on.
Game on.
2FM.
I blame the gremlins in the system. What's not to do with me? Good evening from Damien O'Mara. You're welcome to Monday's Game On. Soccer, rugby, Gaelic games, boxing and much more to come between now and 8 o'clock. Eamon Dunphy will be with us in just a minute to chant soccer. The stories of the last 7 days and the weekend's action just gone by. We're going to chat about Tyson Fury and his big win over Vladimir Klitschko at the weekend. No doubting in a sporting context, it was a brilliant achievement to go to Germany and beat Klitschko in what effectively is his own backyard. You might be aware, and if you were listening to JK on Friday, I know it was brought up, Tyson Fury, a man known for some quite controversial views on various aspects of life. We're going to talk about his suitability to be boxing's great new shining light. If you want to get involved in that, 51552 at Game On 2FM on Twitter. Charlie McGeever, the Clonmel Commercials manager, will join us. The club celebrating making history in the Munster Football Championship. And rugby to come with Donal Lenihan as well. Alan Cawley, how are you?
Flying it, Damien.
There's things happening on my screen that aren't meant to happen.
Really?
Yeah, so I'll just leave you talking.
It'll be all right in the night, don't you be worried.
It'll be all right in the night. So anyway, come here. Fun and games, plenty. Sorry, JJ, if it all deleted and fixed. JJ ran in there like a man possessed.
JJ our saviour.
Plenty to reflect upon. We're going to get stuck into the week that's been. I know I follow your life by looking at you on Twitter. So I know that you enjoyed the soccer at the weekend. You watch Klitschko.
I'd say people probably think, when does this fella see his kids, his wife? But I actually managed to fit it all in.
Good man.
Saturday, Sunday, I was at a funeral. I brought the kids out for lunch. I watched 5 matches over the weekend. I managed to watch the boxing. I had a takeaway. Went out for dinner Sunday night, put up the Christmas tree, fit it all in.
She's a busy man.
See? And you know what the worst part of the whole lot was?
They say men can't.
The football was horrendous.
Well, we will talk about all that in a couple of minutes' time. Quite a lot to reflect upon from the weekend that has just gone by.
Wild West style, right to the end. And the bell sounds to end a tumultuous contest here.
A unanimous decision from the United Kingdom.
It's history for us as a professional team, and anytime anybody ever beats Munster at home, they earn it, and we certainly had to dig deep today.
It will have to be a goal now for Commercials. It's all bent forward. It's around the 13-metre line. It's a position when Levy's going to shoot for goal. He scored a goal! He has scored a goal!
It's an incredible achievement, but also is a fantastic spot for the football and for the footballer, because 5 years ago, Jamie played in no league, no?
The best Chelsea of the season. As a team, the best Chelsea. I think we deserve a bit more than what we got, but I'm really happy with the performance.
None of an answer to Arctic Fire, who's being pushed out up towards the line. It's another one for Willie Mullins. It's Arctic Fire who beats Alfa de Zobo.
Some of the story makers and the big events of the weekend to look back on. 51552 for your text, at Game On 2FM for your tweets. Alan Cawley, as mentioned, is in studio. Big story today. Richie Towell, PFAI Player of the Year, the man that dominated the League of Ireland. 25 goals in the league for Dundalk from midfield. He's gone to Brighton. Is this one of these situations, in what part do you look at it as fair play to him, great for the lad, and in what part do you look at it as another blow to the league?
I think you have to be happy for the lad, Damien, in fairness to him. He's done his bit in the League of Ireland. He's done more than his bit. If you look at his couple of years with Dundalk, he's been absolutely fantastic. I think he scored, there's a stat going around, I think he's something like 44 goals in 96 appearances from a central midfielder as well, which is just phenomenal when you think of it. And I suppose the season that he's just had really was the one that I suppose caught everyone's eye, in the sense he was very good last year as well, but the season just gone, as you said, 25 goals from midfield, then winning the league, they obviously winning the cup, he scored the winning goal. It was almost fairy tale stuff, really. And he's almost, I won't say single-handedly, but he's raised the bar in terms of, obviously we all talk about Dundalk and their fitness levels and the condition that a lot of them are in, but I suppose he kind of maybe possibly started that, in the sense that you've seen him when he took off his top. And I know we kind of laugh and joke about that, but he's in serious nick, as are all the Dundalk lads. And hopefully it's raised the bar for all the other clubs to get up to those levels. So I think the fact that he's going over to an English club now, obviously Brighton, he's ready to go. It's not a case of him having to kind of make up on his conditioning or his fitness or anything like that. I think he's ready to go.
We'll chat to Eamon in just a second. Before we do, let's hear from the man himself. As mentioned, gone to Brighton. They've played 18 games in the Championship. They've won 10, drawn 8, yet to be beaten. So he's going to have a little bit of competition to get into the squad. The news confirmed, Brighton early, 6 a.m. this morning, and Richie Tell has been chatting to the Brighton website.
First and foremost, I need to break into the Brighton squad. They have some really, really good players here. I know it's not going to be easy for me, but I'm very determined that I'm going to give the manager a few headaches. So I'm really excited to get started. I am. Obviously, I can't play until the 4th of January, so I need to keep myself in the best shape possible, and hopefully I can hit the ground running. When I first came over, I seen the setup here, and it's unbelievable. the ground as well is amazing. I think the people that work here, the staff and everyone is so helpful, they are. So they kind of sold it to me from the moment I came. I don't think I would have made the move if I wasn't confident of playing. Obviously, I know it's not going to be easy. They have a lot of good players in my position. There's a lot of games to be played in the Championship. So at stages, people are going to get fatigued and there's going to be injuries picked up. So once I'm ready to step in, and I can hit the ground running, I'm sure it'll be a hard decision for the manager to leave me out then.
That's Richie Tell chatting earlier on. We've talked a lot about players that have gone, say, from the League of Ireland to Scotland, that it's not quite worked out for them. You know, like you look at Kevin Doyle, went from the League of Ireland to the Championship, was Championship Fans Player of the Year the season he went over. How good is Tell? How big a step up is it for him?
It's a big step up, Damien, but I think he's fully capable of making that step up. He has all the attributes, as I mentioned already, his fitness levels and his conditioning, there's not a bother on. Technically, he's very good. I think he'll slot into that environment, no problem, I really do. And I think it'll bring him on even more, being in the full-time environment and being around better players as well, to be honest.
Eamon Dunphy is with us. Eamon, how are you?
Hi, Damien. Good.
I'm not sure how much of Richie Tell you'd have seen over the course of the year. I'm undoubtedly the player of the year in the League of Ireland. Some people talking today about if this is the move that could propel him into the Euro 2016 squad. But surely, I don't know, is Martin O'Neill going to stay loyal to the players that got him to France? Or it would be a massive achievement for a player to force his way in, would it?
It would be, but I don't think there's any question of loyalty here. If Richie does his stuff, you know, for Brighton, who are a top Championship side, and as a goal scorer in particular, you know, that's a skill, and he's got it. And as Alan said there, you know, I've seen him, he looks a fit lad, he's a worker, he's determined, he has the gift of goal scoring, which is a rare, very rare gift. Look at Jamie Vardy at Leicester, who was playing a lot lower than the League of Ireland. He's 28 now, so he's just got a way to go. He's got a journey to make, but I think if you have the ability to score goals, you don't lose it, and B, if you're determined and your attitude is strong and good, you don't lose that either. But so he's got a chance.
Does it beg questions then as to why are more players not on the periphery of the national squad? If he's good enough now, you know, to be in the mix, why wasn't he good enough to at least be in training squads over the last couple of months?
Because you don't prove anything in the League of Ireland, Damien.
Simple as.
I think so. You can only prove that you've got a certain amount of ability, and you've got a capacity, but you've got to do it in a full-time game in England or wherever. Seamus Coleman's a good example. I mean, Seamus was playing here, you know, for Sligo, went to Everton and developed. You do develop when you're working every day with better players. You do develop better pitches, bigger challenges. When you meet those challenges, then you've earned a right to go in the squad. I think putting people in League of Ireland players in the squad as a sort of act of tokenism isn't really what we need.
Okay.
But I think I'd wish him every good luck, and I think he's got a real chance.
Okay, a couple of texts in. So what now for Dundalk, Alan? Main player gone. Text says dump of a ground. They want to make an impact on the Champions League. Who's kidding who?
Yeah, I think it will be a blow for Dundalk. You take the goal scoring alone just out of that, Damien, and it will be a blow to them. But I'm sure Stephen Kenny, he was probably prepared for this, because all the talk, as we knew, coming towards the end of the season was that there was people lurking around, and they knew that he was going to be moving on. So I'm sure Stephen Kenny was trying to fill that void long before this ever happened today. But As Eamon said, I think the first thing Richie Towell needs to do, though, is concentrate and get into the Brighton team before there's any talk of the Ireland stuff. And he's a very dedicated lad. I know that about him. He's a very confident lad. So I'm sure he'll do his stuff. And hopefully, as to say, Damien, if he is to make an impact, who knows?
OK, let's chat about the weekend's English Premier League action. Manchester City on top by virtue of goal difference, 29 points from 14 games. Level on points with Leicester. I want to start with a soundbite of Jose Mourinho after yesterday's nil-all draw between Spurs and Chelsea. Here's his reflection on the game and in particular Chelsea's performance.
The team defended like a team, defended with 11 players. The team with the ball was comfortable against one team that presses really well and aggressively and is difficult to play against them. We were comfortable with the ball and we had our chances. So very happy with the performance. I think we are not happy with the result, but we are happy with the team. I think we have the team again, and we look to the future with a better spirit. And until the end of December, we have three matches to play at Stamford Bridge. We have Leicester and Man United away, which are two of the three top teams, but two teams that you enjoy to play against. So good December, I believe, waiting for us.
That's Mourinho. Eamon, there's a video doing the rounds of Cesc Fabregas from yesterday's game, and it's a montage of all the things that went wrong.
Yeah.
And it's quite a lengthy montage.
Yeah.
Coupling that with Mourinho's comments as of that being the best performance this season, is it in any way, shape or form, do you look at yesterday's performance as a turning point for them?
No. Tottenham are pretty ordinary anyway, and people have been hyping them up. They're pretty ordinary. And Chelsea were ordinary. It was a poor match. And I would say Fabregas is performances for a long time now, for most of this year in fact, since the beginning of the year, even in a championship winning side, have been poor. He looks like he's burnt out. He's got nothing to offer, and he made so many mistakes. He gave the ball away. I didn't see any video, but I watched the match, and he gave the ball away so many times, so spectacularly. So there's no way Chelsea are going anywhere, forget it, and there's no way Tottenham are going very far either.
But then, Alan...
I'm going to tell you now, Damien, I think Liverpool have a great chance. Mm-hmm. If they give him two players in the transfer window, if he gets a couple of the lads who are injured back into the side, if he gets Sturridge fit, Liverpool are 6 points behind. And I look at the five teams in front of them. Leicester, no chance. Arsenal, zero chance. Who else is there? Tottenham, no chance. So that leaves you the two Manchester clubs. Manchester City were lucky, in a way, to beat Southampton. Southampton played really well, and you know they had a chance to equalise, and in the end, City nicked it 3-1. Manchester United may win the league, but it will be the death of football. They won't win the league, actually.
They won't win the league.
Someone will come with a run, and I think Liverpool have every chance, but they need to support him. He started off with all the odds against him. But I've looked at their fixtures, and I'll just read them out for you, Damien, and the listeners, and Alan, see if I can change Alan's mind. In March, right, they got Manchester City at home, Crystal Palace away, Chelsea at home, Southampton away. Then, Tottenham home, Stoke City home, Bournemouth away, Newcastle at home, Swansea away, Watford at home, West Brom away. That's their last eight fixtures, or nine fixtures. And they played all the big teams away from home. They got them all to come to Anfield. So don't tell me with Coutinho, who didn't play yesterday, Sturridge and Benteke firing. They got Henderson back. Whether that's a good thing or not, I'm not sure. But this guy has got something going. And 6 points is nothing.
Now,
so they're certainly for the Champions League slot. And I think they might win the league.
Now, to give Colley credit where credit is due, you talked not about their run-in, but you talked about their next couple of games just before we came on air. You expect Liverpool, even in the next couple of weeks, to go on a run?
Yeah, but I just said to you before we come in, Damien. Now, a lot of people are getting kind of, I wouldn't say carried away, but obviously Klopp has made such an impact both on and off the field since he's come in. The next six fixtures for them, because as Eamon rightly said, they've played a lot of the big boys already. Their next six fixtures are Southampton, Newcastle.
That's the Capital One Cup now. So.
Sorry, Newcastle, West Brom, Watford, Leicester and Sunderland. They're the most five winnable games that you'll ever get, Damien, in the Premier League. And I think they could actually win the five of them. Now, going back to yesterday's performance, they weren't actually that convincing. They had only two shots on target. One of them was the penalty and it was a soft penalty. So Eamon's right in what he says, that I think they do need to sign a couple of players in there and to get Sturridge back fit, then they have a right chance. But I don't think they'll be winning the league. I think top four will be best for them.
Eamon, can I ask you about Jurgen Klopp's comments over the weekend about Daniel Sturridge and how Sturridge needs to learn the difference between what's proper pain and what's just a bit of uncomfortable feeling. It echoed a thing that Steven Gerrard had written in his most recent autobiography about the Man United game and convincing Sturridge to play and Sturridge scoring the goal. Is it right for a player's character and conviction to be questioned publicly by his manager like that?
Well, I don't think... I think Sturridge is spectacularly, you know, absent, if you look back through his career. I think if it was someone else other than Klopp, who I respect, then I wouldn't like it, because I'd like to be fair to the player. And when you're outside the club, you don't really know the full facts and you don't know the medical side of it. But I would sort of back Klopp. He wouldn't have said it. I don't think he's a stupid. I think he's a very bright guy. I think he's a very nice guy. I think he probably has a reason for saying it. And his credibility lends some substance to it. I wouldn't normally, you know, I wouldn't normally criticise someone like Sturridge, because pain is pain. But we all know from our own experience of pain, and I've got considerable experience of it with backs and stuff, that some of it is in the mind, and some of it you've got to fight in a certain way. But the key is, I think, in that statement, he's willing, if you like, to alienate Sturridge on the basis that if things go on the way they are, no one's going to benefit. But if Sturridge takes this on board and maybe pushes himself through a certain threshold, Klopp might get his reward. If he can't do that for medical reasons, you know, there's a psychological side, the medical side. If it's a psychological thing, this may work.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think it's no harm, and probably it's gone to the stage now, Damien, the receiving stats I've seen. Half the game so far for Liverpool, I think 168 games he's available for, whatever it was, half of them he's been out injured for. Like, it's ridiculous at this stage. So Klopp coming in, giving him a little bit of a kick up the backside, there's probably no harm in that, especially when things are so good for Klopp at the moment and they're getting results. That's when people tend to get on board with you. So I think Sturridge will take it as constructive, and we've seen him back yesterday. I think he played a half an hour, and he's a brilliant player as well, Damien, you have to remember, and I'm sure Klopp is aware of that and he knows he needs him. So I think he'll have Sturridge back in the squad, and he'll only add to the things they're doing at the moment.
Okay, Eamon, we've talked a lot on various programmes about Man City, United and the teams at the top of the table. Just to focus at the bottom of the table, Newcastle United, second from bottom. Steve McClaren talking about how the players are doing the right thing day in, day out. Like, he's getting close to Brendan Rodgers' territory of the comical alley approach to public relations.
Yeah, I don't think that they're doing the wrong things on the day that matters, which is usually Saturday or Sunday. I think Newcastle is a comedy show. In fact, it's not a comedy show, because the fans there are wonderful and it's a big club and, you know, people are paying money to watch these games. The chairman is a clown, a rich one, and he can do whatever he wants, and he is doing whatever he wants. I don't think Steve McClaren should have taken the job on the basis he doesn't pick the players that they sign. He's got no power. He's just a stooge. You know, he has a reputation, or had a reputation in the game. But anyone who goes to a club on Mike Ashley's terms basically are either they're desperate, and in the end you get what you deserve, which is nothing. And the players know that McLaren's no power. I saw them, geez, they're an embarrassment to the game and to their own, not to try the way they do. I mean, it's really shocking. They really are a disgrace. But you see, that rot comes from Mike Ashley at the top. You know, I won't say it on air. You might get a writ, Damien.
Look, the Oscars of the journalistic trade, as David Walsh told me on this programme one night. but if you look at it, if McLaren was to go, people talk about Brendan Rodgers being out of work, you talk about, you know, David Moyes being out of work, you'd want to either have a big mortgage that needs to be cleared with the severance package you'll get when Ashley gets rid of you. You know, who, Alan, in their right mind?
I don't think anyone touched that job, as we all know that, and this is not just this year. Newcastle have been a shambles for how many years now, Damien? They really are a mess, and I do feel sorry for the people, because they're the most fanatical supporters you'll ever come across, and so passionate and go every week, even though they're watching drivel every week. And the money that's been spent, like that Colaccini fella, and the mistakes that they're making week in, week out, they're just horrendous. But the big story for me at the bottom, and I watched all the top teams over the weekend, Damien, and they were awful. Chelsea,
yeah,
Arsenal,
yep.
United, they were dreadful, every one of them. Bournemouth deserves so much credit, because they've come up. Your man Eddie Howe keeps to his principles, so he does a fantastic young manager. They're playing great football. They were 2 down. They showed unbelievable character to come back against an Everton team who went 3-2 up in the 95th minute, and they came back again. They're a fantastic sight to watch. And also another big story is Robbie Brady at the weekend was brilliant for Norwich City.
Yeah.
I want to talk to you, Eamon, as well, before we let you go, about Aston Villa. They're already 5 points adrift, only one win from 14 league games. They've lost 11 of their last 14 league games. like, in my mind, they're relegated already. I can't see how it can be turned around. But aside from that, and I know people are queuing up to hit him a kick and slag him off and get on his back, but would you have concerns about Jack Grealish quickly becoming one of these fadeaway stars with all the stuff that he's getting himself caught up in off the field?
I don't really think the incident that they're all talking about last week where he went for a few jars. I mean, kids do that. We did that when you know, I mean, really top players who became top players still went, you know, on the batter when they were kids. What's he, 21 or something? And he had a few drinks. I wouldn't hold that against him. I think he's a player with ability. He's got quite a long way to go to become a regular Premier League player for Aston Villa. But he has got talent. And there's no sign, I haven't seen any sign that he's got a bad character. You know, going out for a few drinks and with the camera phones and stuff these days, you can easily get caught. And I think there, but for the grace of God, going off a lot of people who went on to have good careers in football. So I wouldn't be too hard on Jack Grealish at all.
Couple of texts in. City will still win the league. Don't get too carried away by Klopp just yet. He just needs time. United could win if they got big, big player in the window, but they won't.
United are dreadful.
But come here and I ask you a question, right? And one of the things that's baffled me over the weekend is people queuing up to talk about their tactics, their approach to the game, all that sort of stuff. Are people guilty of rewriting history and how Ferguson's teams played? Like, Ferguson never played swashbuckling football. No, but blowing teams away. But the way people are talking is that, you know, Alex Ferguson's United team was up there with the Brazil team of 1970.
No, who's saying that?
Well, I said in the Irish Times this morning.
I read that article and I disagreed with a lot of it.
But he's wrong on this.
He is wrong. I disagreed with so much of that article today. I read Ken's article and I disagreed. He was basically he compared one season that United had was the example he gave. 98, I think, was the year when he said that they only scored 68 goals with Tevez, Ronaldo, Rooney. What about all the other years that they were unbelievable and the success they had and to keep coming back, them players, Scholes, Beckham, all them great players year in, year out, when everyone was trying to knock them off their perch and they come out, and that's a hard thing to do, Damien, keep successful the way they've done. And they did play great football, and so did Ferguson, because they played attacking football that people wanted to see. I watched United on Saturday night and they were awful. The goal that Leicester City scored was a goal that United used to score years ago on the break. And I'm looking at United now and they're a million miles off that. They've no intensity to their play. There's no purpose about them, no attacking intent whatsoever. I love Rooney to bits, but I'm seriously worried about Rooney. He is struggling so bad at the moment.
Can I just agree with everything that Alan said there, particularly about Rooney? Just want to say one thing, Damien. I think Ken Early's a must-read every Monday. He writes really intelligently about the game, so I'm not picking on him because it's a dissenting point of view. But he didn't quite finish off his argument, because everything Alan said there is right. You know, there's no comparison between the approach of previous Manchester United teams and this one.
Okay.
And he also said about Guardiola and Van Gaal. Guardiola passes forward and passes quickly. Van Gaal's team pass sideways and basically going nowhere.
Yeah, it's what is it, the stat? The most possession of the football in the Premier League before a shot is taken on goal.
15.
Yeah. Here, I'll leave you on this, lads. Mick in Cork. Sturridge is a full-time patient whose career has been disrupted by football.
Well, I think, you know, I've got sympathy for Sturridge. Whatever his problem is, whether it's physical or psychological, every footballer wants to play, and I think he's a good lad. And when he's playing, and he's playing well, he's a hell of a player. Mm.
Did you watch the Tyson Fury fight at the weekend?
I didn't know how to do it. I was bored on Saturday night, and I lead a sad life, and all the football was over, so I tried to do it on the remote control, and I didn't get anywhere.
Okay.
I didn't get anywhere. But it's a kind of, I wouldn't be mad about that sport, but I desperately wanted to see it.
Okay. We've talked in the past about the moral obligation that's put on professional sports people. Have you seen these comments he's made about homosexuality and abortion and everything else? And people question today whether or not he's the type of character that should be held up as the possible saviour of heavyweight boxing.
Yeah, I really think, you know, that if somebody who's good at boxing or anything else is asked about politics or cultural or social issues, if they're talking drivel, you shouldn't broadcast it. If they've got something interesting to say, yeah. Mm. But I don't think this fella is the right kind of guy to be asked about things like that. Mm. I mean, it's a guy in the pub is a bore, you know, talking sort of reactionary old stuff. He's a boxer.
Yeah.
Now, people used to say about me, he's a footballer. Well, they were right. But whatever you are, you're entitled to a hearing if you've got something to add. I don't think what he's saying adds to the store of knowledge. It's just, you know, basic reactionary stuff that no one needs to hear.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about the fight and much more after the break. Eamon, good to talk to you as always. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, see
you,
Eamon. Bye,
Eamon Dunphy. Bye. With us there. 51552 at Game On 2FM. Sorry, one thing we touched upon last week, Tony in Waterford. Would you ask Alan what they think of Jose Mourinho not allowing John Terry to attend the game yesterday?
It's the first I heard of it. Yeah. I know Tony texts in every night, but that's the first I heard of it. Is that true?
Well, doesn't Mourinho have a thing about it? I'm going to Google it. Does Mourinho have a thing about if you're not involved, you basically don't exist?
Ah, no, I'd say if he was injured.
No, he's talked about it. Like, you know, if you're not fit, if you're not part of my
squad. But I wouldn't read it. If that's his policy or whatever, and Terry didn't travel, I wouldn't read too much into it if he's not, obviously, if he can't play. I'd read a lot more into Diego Costa's behaviour, throwing the bib down towards Mourinho. He needs to get rid of him big style.
Yeah. John Terry named on a 55-man shortlist last week for FIFA Pro's Player of the Year for 2015.
Yeah.
Surprised Richie Tell didn't make it if John Terry's on it.
He was good that year, in fairness.
Anyway, 51552 at Game On 2FM. Boxing to come.
Game on 2FM.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. This is Damien O'Mara sitting in for Hugh Cahill. Alan Cawley is here with me as well. The Punters' Council, if you're a regular listener on Friday, you'll know it's when we're joined by our friends in Boyle Sports. We get someone on from a sport or a charity. We give them a couple of bets. They pick which one, and then they can win loads of money for their club. And I know self-praise is no praise, Alan Cawley, but we got there. We got one over the line. Here's a little bit of Friday's programme.
Jason Scanlon, the chairman of the regional football club in Dura Doyle in Limerick, joins us on the line. Good evening to you, Jason.
Hi, John. How are you?
Very, very good indeed. So you're playing for Regional United. How is things at the club? Everything good?
Very good, John. Yeah, we've just opened up a new development of a 3G Astro pitch.
Mighty. All right, Jason, what do you fancy from those four bets?
I think I'll go with Leon's bet.
So Smad Place to win at 8-1?
Yeah.
Okay, that's all where on. Your money's going. Well, hopefully we get plenty for
coming to the straights. Mad Place leading at the moment. Giant Bolster, Fingal Bay, and also trying to pick up is Urano, trying to get back into the action. First Lieutenant running a huge race as well, and it's still Mad Place. First Lieutenant is also getting in there. Wide on the outside is Safford Aurora and Fingal Bay. Who's got the stamina to last home as they've got three fences to go? Mad Place has been out in front. He's been brave, and he's still there. First Lieutenant is picking up. Safford Aurora on the outside, also going well. It's Fingal Bay still there. Mad Place jumps out to his right, but he's still out in front with one more fence, and now he's weaving around a bit, trying to pick up his Safford Aurora, First Lieutenant, and Mad Place is increasing his lead now as he comes to the final fence. He's been out in front throughout, and he's still out in front because he pings the last, and it's going to be Mad Place's Hennessy. What a brave front-running performance, and he's eating up the ground. He looks like he could go on for a further mile because Mad Place is romping to victory. Bobsworth is running on, but it's going to be a victory for Mad Place. How good was that?
It's like that bit of music one of those airlines plays when it lands.
We do that every week now.
Yeah, we've landed half an hour ahead of schedule. We gave ourselves 4 hours to fly from London to Dublin. Anyway, Jason, good evening to you.
Good evening, Damien. How are you?
Not too bad. Congratulations. 800 quid richer. What are you going to use it for?
Oh, that's great. Listen, we've loads of use for money like that in the club. We're going to, you know, we've just opened a new development of a pitch, and we're always seeking to fundraise and help develop our facilities further. So it'll definitely go towards our fundraising and paying off some of our debts as well, of course.
Okay, I was led astray. It's 900. So
even better.
An extra
congratulations,
100.
Jason.
So fair play to you. Two of the four bets came
Thank
in on Friday,
much.
Which doesn't happen all that often. So congratulations to you and all involved with Regional, and we wish you well spending the money.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Sure.
Good to talk to you. That's so there you go. Friday,
brilliant.
You can take part.
€900 for the club.
There you have it.
Brilliant.
Let's talk about this.
The two men are exhausted. They're throwing here only on willpower. They know not what they're doing, but their champion and challenger's hearts refuse to allow them to give in. They're swinging Wild West style right to the end, and the bell sounds to end a tumultuous contest here. Both men punch the air. Tyson Fury jumps onto the second rope just in front of us here. He's barely got the energy to do that. He's given it everything tonight.
That's the closing stages of Saturday night's World Heavyweight title bout from Dusseldorf. Tyson Fury still today coming to terms with being the WBA, IBF, WBO, IBO and the ring champion of the world. That's quite a mouthful. So as you were hearing there, he beat Vladimir Klitschko on a unanimous decision to secure the bout. Boxing journalist Kieran Gallagher was there. He joins us now. Kieran, how are you?
Not too bad, Damien. How are you?
Not a bother. I know we'll talk perhaps about Tyson being quite a controversial character in a second, but in sporting terms, to go there, put in that performance, and to beat Klitschko in effectively what is his own backyard, in sporting terms, was a fantastic achievement.
Yeah, very much so. And if anything, I suppose Tyson Fury's fairly vocal approach both in the build-up and afterwards probably means that maybe his performance itself isn't being recognised for as impressive as it was. Very disciplined. It wasn't the most exciting fight, obviously. It wasn't exactly a slugfest. And really, the clip that you played there probably gives a good demonstration that the last round was the most exciting part of the fight in terms of both men kind of going for it. And I think Klitschko realised late on, maybe the 10th, 11th, 12th round, that he was probably going to have to try to pursue a knockout if he was going to have any chance of winning, because like really by that stage Fury had been kind of so dominant and controlled the fight so well that it didn't look like there could be any chance that the win was in doubt for him. And that in itself is a very impressive fact, because Vladimir Klitschko was previously himself so dominant over the past decade or so as the heavyweight champion of the world.
What was the reaction like in Dusseldorf?
The crowd reaction was actually quite interesting. I mean, for as much as Klitschko has kind of built Germany as a stronghold, and I suppose he's built his pro career there, even though he is vocal over the fact that he considers himself Ukrainian, born in Kazakhstan. But there was a balanced enough crowd reaction in terms of the ebbs and flows throughout the fight. There was a lot of English and Irish fans over there to support Fury, and the reaction to the win seemed to be. I suppose most people were quite astounded at how relatively one-sided the fight seemed, and most people were quite impressed by the performance.
Just then, in terms of the next step for Fury, I know he's been in Bolton today doing a press conference and talking about what the future might have in hold. He doesn't appear to have an awful lot of interest in trying to unify all the belts, and you know, seems quite happy at the prospect of having to get back into the ring with Klitschko, which he's contractually obliged to do.
Yeah, very much so. I think... number one, there's no way that they'd really be able to wrangle their way out of the contract clause for a rematch. So I think they just take it as a given that they'll have to take that fight. I think he's more than happy to take it, because maybe he feels that if he doesn't get the recognition he deserves over his performance, that he just takes it as a given that he'll have to beat Klitschko again. Completely dismissed the prospect already unifying the belts against American Deontay Wilder, who currently holds the WBC title, and basically dismissed the fact that Wilder isn't in his league. I think he referred to him as a has-been basketball player, despite the fact that Wilder was actually an American football player in his first notable sporting achievements. But it doesn't seem as though he holds too much interest, and his Fury's promoter manager Mick Hennessy was just fairly open and honest about the fact that they have the rematch clause to deal with Klitschko, and he considers it to be the biggest money fight out there, so basically why wouldn't they have that?
It's been a phenomenal journey for a guy who, you know, it's funny actually, just to touch upon it before we talk about his career and how he's got to where he's got to. He's the 8th British heavyweight champion of the world, if my maths is right, but he himself is putting him out there as the first Irish, even to the extent that he wanted a neutral anthem before the fight on Saturday night because he considers himself half Irish, half English.
Yeah, that was his promoter McKenzie told us that afterwards, just when we questioned about kind of some of the statements that Tyson come out with, because both Fury and Hennessy have been previously very vocal about the fact that they consider him to have a dual nationality, or that he considers himself Irish. In the build-up to the fight last Thursday, I think I spoke briefly with John Kenny, I've written about it briefly as well, Fury was criticising Klitschko for being a plastic German for building his career over there, and he was quite critical about him in that sense. I asked him whether he could be open to similar accusations of being considered a basically plastic Irishman, or whether he feels it would be a fair comment to compare the two. Fury at that time answered and he said, I don't claim to be Irish, I'm born and bred in Manchester, but I've got Irish heritage, I'm not trying to be an Irishman. But he continued to refer to the fact that his parents and grandparents have Irish connections, and then he completely kind of did a U-turn and at the post-fight press conference announced himself as the first Irish heavyweight champion of the world. So it does seem as So in keeping with a lot of his statements, he can often be quite contradictory. But I think it's fair to say that he does take a genuine pride in terms of having an Irish heritage, and maybe he just doesn't articulate that as well as he could.
Yeah, and former Irish heavyweight champion, and a man who certainly had ambitions to represent Ireland in Beijing in 2008. So he's put, I suppose, his gloves where his mouth is in that regard. Just before we finish, we talked at the start of the programme about the kind of moral obligation that we place on professional sports people, and, you know, do we hold sports people to a different moral standard than other people? A lot been made again of his comments in advance of the fight, an interview with Oliver Holt about basically, you know, paedophilia being the third pillar that will bring about the damnation of the world or the apocalypse. It was much made in the post-fight about the controversial aspect to his views on homosexuality, his views on the place of women in society.
There wasn't a great deal made in terms of Fury being questioned at the immediate post-fight press conference. The most relevant statements can probably give towards that was a few of us did question Mick Hennessy, his promoter and manager, about those comments. Hennessy was adamant that Fury was misquoted, and he said that he was basically saying what was in Bible scriptures. I'm not sure, obviously having not been present for the original comments that Fury's purported to say, how accurate he was or wasn't quoted. It does seem as though he's more than happy to express very, very controversial views that if he was to say are very hard to stand over. And I mean, really, a lot of what he's been purported to say seems reprehensible. But he himself, he seems to get caught up with playing a role of kind of being maybe a bit of a trash talker and a bit of a colourful figure as well. Interestingly, he did say to the journalist presence at one stage when he was asked about how black and white his comments often appear to be and whether he feels he's misunderstood. He said he feels that he can fool everybody and that they wouldn't know what he's really thinking in his mind. He said, I can fool all of you, but I can't fool God because he knows the true me and knows what I'm thinking deep inside. So it seems as though he does take quite a religious standpoint on a lot of his views that he puts out there. How much you could say that he's right or wrong to do that, I suppose, comes down to maybe personal opinion. Mm. But he's definitely not afraid to be a controversial character, it seems, in a lot of his statements.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Kieran, good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us, Kieran Gallagher. Joining us there, text in Damien, the heavyweight division has been a joke for 20 years. Not a big fan of Fury's, but what the hell have his personal views got to do with his suitability to be world champion? Political correctness now trying to judge sporting suitability.
Just what you were asking, Kieran, there.
Well, you see, I'm not, come here. Like, in my way of looking at it is, if that's his honestly held opinion, let it be his honestly held opinion. And who are any of us to, we might disagree, we can question it. At its core, if that's what he believes, that's what he believes. Good luck to him. I might believe differently. But, you know, the question I'm asking is, well, is it relevant?
Yeah, I suppose the question you're saying now is him being the world champion being tarnished because of his views? And you would almost think that because of the way it's been, I suppose it's all over the media today.
But I don't think it's been addressed, right? Even, you know, people are, you know, even in some of the post-match stuff, in some of the media, you know, Klitschko got what he deserved. Klitschko, you know, he's not the shining light that people think he is. But in certain aspects of the British media in particular, I think a lot of these questions aren't being asked. There's a big spread on, it was the Mail on Sunday, an interview that Oliver Holt did on the 7th of November.
Yeah, because
you'll find it pretty
easy. He got into a bit of a Twitter spat with Oliver Holt after it was, because he said it, the headline, and Oliver Holt basically said, I didn't put out the headline. So, look, I watched the fight, Damien, Saturday night, and I just judged it purely on a boxing fight and a boxing match, and he won it. He won it fair and square. He deserved to win it. And that's all I'm kind of looking at, to be honest with you. Whatever about these comments, I don't know when they were made or when they were, are they digging them up from the past now? But as you said, if there's opinions and there's views, well then, I don't know.
Yeah, but I think it's something that's worth putting to him.
Yeah.
Anyway,
It will be put to him.
We might do that if we get the opportunity.
He's not short to give an opinion anyway. He's the worst singer I've ever heard as well.
And that's saying something considering some of your karaoke efforts over the years. Anyway, we are going to move on to Gaelic Games. If you were here at the top of the programme, and why wouldn't you have been? You would have heard great commentary from Pat McAuliffe as Clonmel Commercials were crowned AIB Munster Senior Club Football Champions yesterday. 1-7-9 points win over Nemo Rangers in Mallow. An injury time goal from Michael Quinlivan snatched the title, sparked celebrations that I imagine are still ongoing. Charlie McKeever, the Clonmel manager, is with us. Charlie, how are you?
Not too bad, Damien. How are you?
Not too bad. How are those celebrations still? I'm sure they're still going strong.
Well, we've given them a couple of days. You can judge by the voice here that I certainly haven't pulled out of them involved myself. So, look, yeah, we've celebrated long and hard, and rightly so, because it was, a landmark occasion for us yesterday.
You've made history. First time, obviously, for the club. First time, obviously, for Tipperary. 1-7 to 9 points. The injury time goal, it kind of shadows the fact that I'm sure you believe over the course of it that that was a victory that was deserved by more than the late drama and the 1 point would suggest.
Well, look, I mean, we were up against, I suppose, the kingpins of Munster football over the years, a very experienced outfit in Nemo Rangers, and we knew it was going to be tight down the stretch, Damien, as it was. But, like, this young group of players, and they are very young, that we have come back from the dead on three occasions this year already. So it wasn't unexpected. And in saying that, I think that over the course of the 60 minutes, we had left a number of chances behind us. I think on possession, we were probably around 60-40. So, I think it was deserved at the end of the day.
For you, though, people who followed your career might remember you in your Finn Harps days, and they'll know, the discerning listener will know, that's not a Tipperary accent that you're sporting. You've been involved with this club for quite some time. That this must mean a great deal for you to have brought so many of these players through the different age grades with the club.
It is indeed, and it's a big day for many coaches in the club. We've had a great underage structure here in the last 10 to 12 years, and these guys are now reaching their peak. They're not there yet, but they're certainly into their early 20s and mid-teens. And we've developed, I hope, a style of play that is easy on the eye and has been developed. And this is the start, I would hope, of as I say, well done to all, either at the club level or indeed a
Okay. The phone is starting to tear up on us ever so slightly, so we might try and stick with it and see. I just wanted to talk to you about the last time you and I spoke was in the bowels of the Cusack stand after the All-Ireland final this year, and you talked to me about, forget about Tipperary losing the game against Kerry on the day, look at this as for what it's done for Tipperary football. You must add yesterday to that as well, that between, you know, the club, Tipperary's minors, Tipperary's under-21s, are we looking at a changing face in football in Munster, potentially somewhere down the line?
Well, Damien, I suppose it's not a one-hit wonder. We've been at it now for a number of years. I think that we've done well at underage level over the last number of years in Tipperary. I think this team mirrors that sort of thing. A lot of these players are playing in the Tipperary colours at underage and at 21 now at senior. So I hope that it is the beginning of it. But look, we will lose players going forward to hurling it every so often, but at the same time I think they'll come back to us if that doesn't work out for them.
Okay, wish you well with the rest of those celebrations, Charlie. Good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, Damien. Thank you.
Charlie McGeever joining us there. Clonmel Commercials, worth mentioning as well, Owlert, who made history in Leinster hurling final yesterday as well. So
dreadful conditions they were playing in yesterday.
I was even talking to my dad about this earlier on.
Players.
Come here, we talk about needing to restructure the GAA calendar, but would you want to be watching an All-Ireland club hurling final played at this time of the year?
Oh, I felt so sorry for the players. And how long are them lads training? And you can hear it in Charlie's voice exactly what it means to them. And to be playing in them conditions, it was dreadful.
Anyway, they got the win.
But
that's all that matters.
Them,
they've got the medal in the back pocket, so they'll enjoy that. We're going to chat rugby after a quick break.
Get your game face on.
Game on 2FM.
You're very welcome back to the programme. Rugby to finish. Donal Lenihan's with us. Donal, how are you?
I'm good, Damien.
Now, I want you to join in an education of Alan Cawley, who's with me here in studio. I don't know if you're familiar. Cawley played League of Ireland. You know, he's one of these football upstarts, right? here is a clip, Alan Cawley, from Munster's game against Connacht at the weekend.
Okay.
Referee, Mr. Whitehouse, chastising the Connacht captain, John Muldoon. Listen to how this is handled.
My turn to speak. You speak to me like that again, and it won't be a scrum, it'll be a penalty. I'm all for chat at the right times and in the right tone. Do you understand me? Have the respect to look at me when I'm talking to you, please. Do you understand me?
Yes.
Thank you very much. You know I'm quite meanable. Speak to me tidy and I will listen all day.
Sorry, sir.
Thank you. What were you saying?
Sorry. He slapped the ball.
No, I won the ball. You won it fair and square, passed it back to your player and he's knocked on. Scrum here.
Look at me when I talk to you.
Did you just say sorry, sir?
Yeah. He called him sir twice. You see,
Donald, right?
You lads have a bit of respect for officials, not like these soccer lads.
You always call a referee sir. 'Tis in the privacy of the dressing room you can tell him what you really think.
That's amazing.
It was a great clip, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, I think Nigel Owens has a lot to answer for. I mean, he set the bar in terms of communication with players. Good communication, one has to say. Whitehouse, I think, is trying to follow suit there. A little bit too schoolmastery for my liking, but I think he got the message across, and he got his own back on John Muldoon later on. Anyway, when he gave him 10 minutes in the bin.
Now, On a lot to talk about. Robbie Henshaw, 6 weeks out, broken bone in his hand. Dennis Buckley, ankle strain, he'll be out for 3 weeks. Owen Masterson is out. Connacht, 18-12 winners, a lot to reflect upon. But how big a loss are those players, considering the momentum that Connacht have managed to build up in the last couple of weeks?
Well, they're huge because, you know, they already had a fairly extensive list of injuries, albeit I think they have a couple of players back last week. But Robbie Henshaw, I mean, his performance on Saturday night was outstanding. I thought he was Ireland's most consistent back during the World Cup. He played full back in difficult conditions the last night and mastered the position. We know he's been playing at inside centre for Ireland. So it's just his ability to do the right thing at the right time. I mean, last play of the game, his ability. I mean, he made Keith Earls look a bit foolish, which, you know, isn't an easy thing to do. But so from that point of view, he'll be a massive loss, as will Dennis Buckley. I mean, I thought he had an outstanding season with Connacht last year, and he's certainly keeping up those standards. And, you know, he's one, I think, that deserves to be looked at with a view to higher honours in the not-too-distant future.
Connacht, top of the table, first win at Thomond Park since 1986. 38 games away, they've never beaten one of the other provinces. So they've got that monkey off their back now. But this is all part of the upward trend. This was not a fluke. This was not one of these one-off incidents.
No, it wasn't. I mean, in truth, they should have won by more. You know, they had that element. Penalty try was very, very harsh. Yet they rode that 10-minute storm. In fact, they should have been 3 points ahead during the period. Craig Rawlinson missed a penalty. I know the conditions were difficult, but I think, again, it's a sign of the maturity that you're seeing from Connacht. You know, they had a game against a controversial game, if you remember, against Cardiff last year, that they lost in the very last second of the game. I mean, just looking at their body language, their communication, their ability to work for each other during that period when Muldoon was off the field, all those are very positive signs. And in addition, they had some, you know, very young talent fellas that we weren't overly familiar with. James Connolly in the back row starting a Pro 12 game for the first time. He was outstanding. Delahunt the hooker. I mean, they lost McCartney, who's been a very good player for them in the last two seasons. But in terms of his set-piece responsibilities, Delahunt, who's only 21 years of age, was outstanding. So huge pluses for Connacht. And you could just see them growing. You know, you hope that those injuries won't set them back too much. But, you know, at least there's only one more sort of Pro 12 now for a couple of weeks. They'll be going into the Challenge Cup, which they're doing. They're unbeaten in that as well. So it's unbelievable, really.
Just to get then briefly your reflections on the other game of the weekend. Again, coming at a cost, Luke McGrath from Leinster out for a couple of weeks with a medial ligament injury. Noel Reid out longer with an ankle injury picked up. Rickard Strauss likely to be back. Sean O'Brien being treated for an inner ear issue, a vestibular impairment, it's called. So seemingly he's having problems with his balance. What was your assessment of Leinster's win over Ulster?
Not quite as good a game as the one in Thomond Park. I think it was a needs must, really, for Leinster. I mean, they were under severe pressure, having lost the two opening Champions Cup games. They were back in the RDS for the first time since that comprehensive defeat to Wasps. So really, it was all about winning. It was about addressing the areas that were deficient against Bath the previous week. I mean, the first scrum of the game, I think they got a penalty. The second scrum, they drove Ulster back 10 metres and got another penalty. So that was one area that had let them down the previous 2 weeks that you could see they had addressed. Their lineup was better. Their ability to get over the gain line through Benteo was much improved. So I'd say, you know, full marks to their coaching team for the week building up to that game. As I say, it wasn't a spectacular game. I mean, second half was nil all, but I think it was a far better performance from Leinster. From Ulster's perspective, Damien, I'd be worried. I mean, they're down in seventh place. As the Pro 12 is now, they wouldn't qualify for the Champions Cup. But, you know, they looked very poor up front, I thought. And, you know, defence, as you would expect under Les Kiss, was excellent. But from an attacking point of view, they have a lot to work on.
To finish, I suppose the one silver lining on the cloud is you're no longer part of the last Munster team to have been beaten by Connacht in Limerick.
Yeah, thanks for the God. Every time this game comes up, every single year they talk about 1986. So I can't say I was too disappointed when they won the game.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Donald, thanks as always. Alan Cawley, thank you as well. Thank you to JJ. Thank you to Andrew. Good night from Damien O'Mara. We'll chat tomorrow at 7.